Good afternoon, everybody. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to the Vox Pop for Tuesday, November 14th. I'm Alan Chartok. Partisan gerrymandering is the practice of drawing legislative and congressional district lines to maximize the power of an incumbent political party. We know all about that in New York. The practice is the center of the case before the U.S. Supreme Court that could impact America's political landscape. Here to discuss the case in gerrymandering is Vincent Bonaventri of Albany Law School. And we want to hear from you. The number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Hey, this just isn't right. I mean, we say we live in a democracy, we send our kids to fight for it, and yet we allow these guys to go up and draw their own districts where they run. Hey, give us a call, 1-800-348-2551. Hello again, and welcome back to the Vox Pop, WAMC's live daily afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Alan Chartok. Partisan gerrymandering is the practice of drawing legislative and congressional district lines to maximize the power of an incumbent political party. The practice is the center of a case before the U.S. Supreme Court that could impact America's political landscape, including that in New York State. The case stems from Wisconsin in 2011. The state's Republican controls the redistricting process for the first time in four decades. A divided federal court later found that the Republicans, using computer technology along with new voter data, were able to draw new district lines to solidify the control of the legislature, or at least the rest of the decade. A year after the redistricting, Republicans captured only 49% of the statewide vote, but they still won, get this, 60 to 99 state legislative seats, while the Democrats, who won a majority of the vote, captured a mere 39 seats. With the next census quickly approaching, who gets to draw the lines in 2020? Here to discuss the case is our good friend, Vincent Bonaventri of Albany Law School. What do I call you? Vinny, Vincent?
Vin is good.
Okay. Vin. You tell us, set the whole thing up for us. How I got this crazy feeling. How could it be that in the land of the free, the home of the brave, and a place that exports supposedly democracy all over the globe, we let legislative leaders draw their own districts?
Well, for one thing, the United States Constitution gives that power to the state legislators. So right there, you have to start off with that. But the real issue is what the state legislators do with that. And to the extent that the country is incredibly partisan, right, it's divided along partisan lines, that's exactly the kind of result you get when the state legislators decide to carve up a state. You know, they carve up these states to make sure that the dominant party, you know, is much, much favored in the elections. You know, they do the cracking and the packing, you know, so if the other party, you know, has a majority in a particular district, then they carve up that district so there's no longer a majority for the other party. And then they pack, so if they can't possibly dilute the vote in a particular district, they try to cram in as many members of that opposing party so that they're limited to a very few districts. And like you pointed out in Wisconsin, this is exactly what happened. You had the Republicans who were in control of the legislature and control of the governor's mansion. And even though the Republicans received a minority of the vote in the state, they received, you know, almost two-thirds of the legislative seats. Yeah, I mean, this goes to the heart of democracy. I mean, it devalues the vote. It's it really is disgusting. But
that ain't right.
Of course, it's not right. If we're talking about the value of a vote, that each vote should actually be worth every other vote. You know, when the Supreme Court, in an era when the Supreme Court was much, much more responsible than it is now, you know, they enforced the doctrine of one person, one vote. You could not devalue the vote. So in the past, where you had districts which were by and large just acreage, just land, they had as much power as districts which were not as much land, but were many more people, many more votes.
Rotten boroughs.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, but, you know, we had that in New York State as well. We had that in a lot of the states.
Hey, you know what? We still have bad things in New York State. I'm sorry. You know, the Senate is constitutionally Republican, they say, because, you know, they've been able to get away with this thing for years. Oh, goes John Flanagan to the great computer on the wall and says, oh, great computer, draw me districts where we can't lose.
Yeah, but the Democrats are co-conspirators in that. You know, so by and large,
absolutely,
the state is carved up so that it's going to be very, very difficult for the Democrats to lose the assembly, and it's going to be very difficult for the Republicans to lose the Senate. Although they actually are losing it, even though it's been gerrymandered, they're still losing it.
I was going to tell you, Vin, one day Flanagan walked up, I have it on good authority, walked up to the great computer on the wall and said, oh, great computer on the wall, draw me districts where I can't lose. And just like, you know, Snow White or whatever that thing was, you know, the computer looked back and said, sorry, John, not enough not enough people to move around so that you can win. And it's a very blue state. It's disgusting.
But, you know, that's why partisan gerrymandering today is particularly pernicious, because with the advent of very, very sophisticated computers and programs, the dominant party could almost assure make it impossible for them to lose control, make it impossible for members of their party to lose. I mean, how many incumbents lose an election today? Very, 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 very few. And it's not because the voters are satisfied with them. It's because the districts are drawn up in such a way as to protect the incumbents.
Now, you know how many phone calls we have right now? None. This is very scary for me, because I'll tell you the truth. If we were talking about Judge Roy Moore right now, or we were talking about, you know, sex, there would be, every phone would be ringing off the hook. But there are people who are nodding at their radios or their whatever and computers and saying, who cares? Well, there's a reason to care, because your vote doesn't count.
Well, not only that, I think when we talk about how dissatisfied the voters are, a great deal of the reason for that is because of this gerrymandering, because the voters are not getting what they voted for. Right. So, you know, I mean, you could have the voters, they want to boot out an incumbent. It's virtually impossible to boot out an incumbent, because the district is usually drawn so that the incumbent has virtually no chance of losing.
Now what's interesting, Vin, is that in the last congressional round here in New York State, during the courts said, you know, we don't like this, it smells. So the courts drew the districts. So you had what are called fair fights in many of the districts. They were very close, and it was a fair fight. That's what a lot of us want to see happen, that an outside group will always be the ones to draw it. You don't let some guy draw his own districts, John Flanagan, right, or Boss Hasty in the assembly draw their own districts, because then it's not democracy.
Yes, well, that's exactly what the lower federal court thought. In the Gill v. Whitford case, the lower federal court actually ordered a redrawing of the district. But the United States Supreme Court, in granting review, also 5-4 granted a stay, say, hey, no redrawing till we hear this case. So,
and speaking of the Supreme Court, you're an expert in that, Vin. What does this look like in terms of what could we expect?
I think what we can expect is, and it's unfortunate, but I think we can expect 4 blind votes against partisan gerrymandering, because they're going to vote that way anyway. The Democratic liberals on the court are going to vote against partisan gerrymandering, and you're probably going to get 3 or 4 of the conservatives, and the same way, blindly, they're going to say, no, the Supreme Court ought not to interfere with it. And it looks like it's going to be Justice Kennedy again, the only one who I've said on many occasions is the only one that seems to be acting like a judge on that court.
And Justice Kennedy has hinted, has he not, that he's not real happy about gerrymandering.
No, well, actually, you know, several of the justices on the court, including some of the conservatives like Samuel Alito, said, you know, he finds it very, very distasteful, but he's just not sure that the court ought to step in. That's a real problem, and I think that's that is a legitimate issue, Alan, is whether or not the judicial branch ought to step in.
And you will remember that Justice Felix Frankfurter,
back from the day,
was quoted as saying, we should not step into the judicial thicket.
Yeah, the political thicket. That's right.
This is not our job.
That's right. I mean, that's a legitimate concern. What is not a legitimate concern is this is a Republican versus a Democratic issue. So the Dems all line up on one side. The Republicans all line up on the other side, as opposed to acting like justices.
So in any case, we got two people on the phone, Joanna and Mike. We'll be right back to them. We're going to take a few second break and we'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from the Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz. A Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare's comedy retold for today through November 19th, newpaltz.edu/theater. Hudson Wine Merchants in Hudson, New York, offering selections for holiday meals, gifts, and everyday wines, curbside service and delivery available. Raise your glass. HudsonWines.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. Mass Match, for over 15 years, a locally owned dating and matchmaking service connecting singles through private matchmaking in western Massachusetts and beyond. MassMatch.com. And Stavros, helping people with disabilities achieve their dreams. Offices in Amherst, Greenfield, and Springfield. Stavros.org for more information.
And we are back with Professor Vin Bonventri of the Albany Law School, who is an expert on all of this. So Vin, let's take some calls. Is that okay with you?
Sure.
All right,
good.
We'll go to Joanna in South Hadley. Okay, Joanna, you're on.
Thanks so much. I have three, I guess, interrelated questions. You can answer one or more. One is, I think the reason I glaze over with this issue is I want to know what are the actual solutions on how to rebalance a badly gerrymandered districts? That's question number one. What are the actual concrete steps? Two, is it a legislative remedy or something else to prevent gerrymandering in the future? And three, how does this toggle with the other issues, like whether we should have auto voter registration to promote more registration of voters and how to promote more actual participation and low voter turnout?
I think those are absolutely wonderful questions. With regard to your last question, this is part and parcel of the same problem, which is diminishing and discouraging voting. I mean, if you're in a district where you know your vote is just not going to count, either because you're in a district where your party is certainly going to win because your district has been packed, so you know your party's going to win, why bother voting? Or if you know there is virtually no chance that your party candidates is going to win, why bother voting? So it goes to the same thing, diminishing the value of the vote and really discouraging voting. With regard to solutions, you know what several states have done, and they're mostly Western states, is they have created independent commissions. And these independent commissions carve up the state. And they carve up the state's districts in such a way as to minimize partisan influence. And so the districts are much more fairly drawn than they are right now. And in fact, the United States Supreme Court 2 years ago in a case coming out of Arizona said that it was fine for Arizona to do that, even though the argument was, well, the Constitution says the state legislature is supposed to do that. And the Supreme Court majority said, well, you know, when the people vote to have the independent commission do it, well, the people are giving the legislative powers to a commission, so we're going to approve that. That certainly is an excellent, it seems to me, an excellent solution.
And as you know, then, many of these states make the argument the commission will report to us, and then the legislature will rubber stamp what the commission has said, and that gets around that issue of the state legislature doing what it's supposed to be.
That's right. You could do it in several ways. Of course, as soon as the legislature is given the authority to review what the commission has done, then you run into the same problem that we have now, unless, of course, you have the system where you limit what the legislature can do. So the legislature can vote up or down. If it votes down, then it goes back to the commission, but ultimately it's the commission that will carve up the state.
That's right. And as you know, being the expert that you are, even the commissions can have politics involved with them. In other words, who gets to be on the commission, whose person are they, that kind of thing.
Well, of course, you know, you get that every time you have a commission. I don't care what kind of commission it is, even when it's a commission about the merit selection of judges, it depends upon who's on that commission.
Right.
So what you do is, I mean, you come up, you devise a way in which the commission could be as bipartisan or multipartisan or as nonpartisan as possible. And sometimes it's been very successful.
Yeah. There are other examples in which the courts get to make the decisions.
Right. But that's when it's really problematic, because then you have one branch of government, which some of us may favor, but that branch of government then is stepping into the authority that the Constitution leaves up to the other two branches.
Okay, Joanna?
Well, in terms of those Western states that have that kind of a nonpartisan commission, how did they get there? Was it legislatively that this commission was established?
Good question, Joanna. You know, in Arizona, for example, the legislature wouldn't do it. So the people, by referendum, they voted it. They voted it. And then as soon as the people voted by referendum to have an independent commission, you know what happened? The Arizona legislature sued. They sued because they didn't want an independent commission.
Now, Joanna, in our state, the wonderful state of Massachusetts, the Commonwealth, we can do that. We can get something on a ballot. In New York State, I'll tell you when they're going to allow initiative and referendum in New York State. Ready? Never.
Hell freezes over, right?
That's the one.
But like everything else, I mean, referenda, I mean, that's not an unalloyed good. I mean,
No, but it could be better.
I don't know about that.
I do.
Mean, people get all emotional and there's a hot issue, controversial
issue. They do that in regular
issue.
Elections, right?
What?
I mean, don't people get emotional about Donald Trump? Don't people get emotional about... You know,
but in referenda, as in Arizona, we like what Arizona did. But, you know, if they have a referenda to amend the state constitution, now you got something that's a little more permanent.
Yeah. Hey, Joanna, thank you.
Thank you.
OK, now let's go to Mike in Richmond. All right, Mike in Richmond, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking the call. It's a very important topic. I wish more people would realize how important this is.
You bet.
And this type of program certainly helps that. I guess my first, I have a comment and a question. My comment is that what our vote actually does today is just so vile, because we're given the illusion that it matters, and it absolutely doesn't. We'd be much better off if we were living in Puerto Rico, where we know for a fact we don't get a vote, but at least there's no illusion that we're partaking in this supposed democracy. So my question then is, if we assume for the sake of argument that the Supreme Court decides to rule against gerrymandering in Wisconsin, my understanding is that it only applies to that state, and would it even matter as far as the midterms go next year? In other words, would there be enough time to redraw those gerrymandered districts? And would it then apply to other states as well? Thank you.
Well, with regard to your comment, it certainly is true that the only thing that's worse than a vote which is devalued is a devalued vote where you're being told by the leaders, oh, your vote actually counts when it doesn't. With regard to the United States Supreme Court ruling, no. The United States Supreme Court, like other high courts, whether it's the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court, the New York Court of Appeals, the High Court of another state, those courts are in the business of, we're not allowed to say it, but it's true, they make law. That's what they do, because they get cases where the law is not clear, or the law is clear, but one set of laws takes you one place, the other set of laws takes you the other place. So these courts must make law to decide the case. When the United States Supreme Court resolves the question in this Wisconsin case, Gill v. Whitford, it will be, we call it, setting a precedent. That's just another nice way of saying that the court will be making law. When the court makes law, the United States Supreme Court, that law then applies to the entire country. Sure. It won't just be a rule for Wisconsin. It will be a rule for every state in the country.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So given that scenario, will that change occur in time to affect the boundaries for the district in the 2018 midterm elections?
Well, it depends upon exactly what the Supreme Court does. If the Supreme Court says, yes, we agree with the challengers in Wisconsin that this was really rotten. On the other hand, we don't want to upset the apple cart too much, so we're going to wait until the next census for this to come into play to be applied. They could do that too.
So not till after 2020.
That's right.
Thanks, Mike. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. I want you. This is your chance to be on the radio. Don't be complaining about other people being on the radio. Now's the time for you to be on the radio. Say what you think. That's what we treasure here. 1-800-348-2551. We'll go to George in Stamford. All right, George, you're on.
Yes, hi. In New York State, we recently had an election, and there were three propositions. The first one, which I admit voting against, per the teachers' union, of which I'm a member, and other organizations' recommendations.
The CONCON.
Would it not have been good to have a constitutional convention, at which time the gerrymandering outrage might have been addressed? Thank you. I'll take my answer.
No. You have to stay on. That's part of the deal. Let me just try this one on for size, Vin, and then you can tell me why
sure.
I'm wrong. but basically, they used that a lot when they
yes.
were pushing the Constitutional Convention. They were using, this is your chance to get rid of the gerrymander
right.
In New York. So I think great minds speak alike, think alike there, George. They were making that argument, Vin.
Yes, but also great minds had very different views. It was very interesting that you had some very bright, very good people on both sides of the issue, both for and against the convention.
Sure.
On both sides. And I'll confess, I was torn by it, but ultimately I decided to vote in favor of the Constitutional Convention because most of the people that I really trusted were also for it, but there were great risks. You said the Constitutional Convention could have corrected the gerrymandering problem. It could have made it worse. Every issue yeah. before the state Constitutional Convention, the Constitutional Convention could have made those issues worse depending upon who were delegates to that convention.
Putting it differently, you know, you better be careful here.
That's right.
Because these people are the same people who drew
they might
the,
well
the
be.
Legislature.
That's right. They might
and
well
they might
be.
Come by and say, let's get some more protections. Thanks, George. All right. Now we'll go to Jeff in the car. All right. Jeff in the car. You're on.
Hi. Good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. Something tangential to this that frustrated me when you talk about devaluing the vote was the notion of superdelegates.
Right.
And so someone picks up more delegates in a state, but they're basically decided by the superdelegates, and the candidate that may have gotten more primary votes doesn't get the delegates. And that happened with Bernie Sanders.
Right, right.
That, to me, is a tremendous devaluation of the vote.
Right.
A small handful of people are deciding that for the election, the nominee's fate.
Well, you're absolutely right in that. On the other hand, and the reason to have superdelegates is because many of the party leaders don't necessarily trust the results of the primaries. As you're well aware, in the primaries, by and large, the most activist members and devoted members of the party end up voting. And one of the problems we've had with the primaries, even though they're supposed to enhance the democracy, our democratic values, on the other hand, what really has happened, because we have so many primaries, is that the more extreme members of each party are the ones that end up winning the primaries. I mean, that's been going on. So the superdelegates was a way to kind of protect against the vices of the primaries.
Well, the vices of democracy.
Yeah, the vices of democracy. Well, of course, we have that.
Yeah.
That's what the framers were worried about. We have the Bill of Rights as a check against democracy. The Supreme Court is a check against democracy. You know, it's not as though the framers really trusted democracy.
I remember when we got the superdelegates, it was because in one of the elections, I wish I remember when, the major office holders in the Teddy Kennedys and the McGoverns and the other guys weren't allowed to be at the convention because they hadn't won. So they became the superdelegates.
That's right. Yeah.
In the future. Well, Jeff, thank you very
much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Be careful in that car.
Thank you.
Okay. And now we're going to go, believe it or not, to Martin in Bern. Okay. Martin in Bern, you're on.
Hi. How are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I had a quick question. I was wondering about. My understanding was that when, you know, like, for example, like when the U.S. government was formed and the Senate was based on, you know, two senators per state, and then the House of Representatives was based on, you know, population, that the state legislatures also had a similar setup. But at some point in the 60s, one person, one vote was used basically to require any house of a state legislator, whether it was unicameral or bicameral, be based on population.
Right.
I'm wondering, in hindsight, if that might have been a mistake, in the sense that I know there was a lot of abuses of it, where, you know, towns of very low number of people, you know, had a whole state senator themselves and that sort of thing. But if both houses of, let's say, the New York State Legislature are based on population, you know, New York's a good example where downstate is going to have far more representation than upstate ever possibly would, whereas if you had 62 state senators, one per each county of the state or something like that, you know, you might have some of these issues where upstate New Yorkers feel, you know, lesser than the vote of someone from downstate and vice versa. You know, maybe that would be a compromise to deal with that. I was just wondering if there was any maybe more history or context about that that I might not know about, or any other kind of comment about that.
Well, with regard to the federal Constitution, of course, the makeup of the Senate and the House of Representatives, that is the Senate not being proportionally representative and the House of Representatives being proportionally representative, that was a compromise. That was a compromise to protect the smaller states. Remember, states are sovereign. The federal government isn't the only sovereign entity in our form of government. The states are also sovereign in their own province. With regard to within a state, the counties aren't sovereign. The cities aren't sovereign. They're all, you know, corporations of the state. So you don't quite have that kind of issue that you had with the formation of this republic, which is you had sovereignties, small states, who didn't want to be crushed and overwhelmed by the larger states. You just don't have that within a state.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But it makes me wonder, though, what is even, like, the utility of having, like, bicameral state legislature.
Good question.
Both an assembly and a Senate.
Excellent question.
I'd like to check in on that one. Here's my problem with that, Martin.
I like it.
Here's my problem. Robert Michels, the famous sociologist, wrote a thesis called The Iron Law of Oligarchy. So that while you have an assembly and a Senate in New York, you really only have two guys. You have the Speaker of the Assembly, who is the all-powerful Wizard of Oz, and you have the same thing in the Senate. Everybody lines up, and these guys are the head oligarchs, and they make it. So at least you have two oligarchs competing with each other as opposed to only one oligarch in the entire legislature. Do you buy that? Do you buy that, Martin?
Yeah, that makes sense. It just, I guess, in the grander scale of it, when I think, is it only, I think it might only be Nebraska that has a unicameral.
That's correct. Right,
yeah. I could be
it
wrong.
It works pretty good in Nebraska. It's a darn good state. Yeah.
It was my one question that I always gave the kids on American Government on the midterm.
Yeah. I like the idea. Saves a lot of money. A lot less air. Like, a lot less hot air.
Why don't you have a second balance.
But
why don't you just elect one guy? See, one guy and call him the legislature.
Well, there's no reason to think it's only going to be one guy if you have a unicameral legislature. You're still going to have the governor, right? You got the governor, you got the unicameral legislature.
You still got one guy in that particular venue, in the legislative venue, who becomes the oligarch. Yeah. Don't you see?
You tell me, give me a good reason for having two houses of the legislature in New York.
No, I can't do that.
How many members of the assembly? What good does it do?
Especially when one of those houses, the state Senate, has been kept constitutionally Republican. Frankly, okay, get close to your radios, folks. I'm going to tell you something. You know who keeps it Republican? Andrew Cuomo. Yeah. Andrew Cuomo likes a Republican.
He's being nice and bipartisan.
Yeah, right. He doesn't want those Democrats carving up the state and using the people's
money.
But
you like a balance, don't you, Alan?
What do you mean?
You don't want the state to be entirely blue, do you?
Yeah.
You do?
Well, I like
that. I'm a liberal Democrat, but I like to have some kind of moderation by the Republicans.
Well, then,
otherwise, we go off the deep end, just like everyone else.
Right. Then they have to run for office. Then they mess up. Then people vote them out of office. It's happened before.
It's almost impossible to vote these people out of office.
Well, I can prove to you you're wrong.
How many get voted out of office?
I can prove to you you're wrong because Mario Cuomo got beat by a non-entity named George Pataki, otherwise known as people get tired of some sides.
Well, that's right. The governor, because that's not a gerrymandered district.
Right. Okay, Martin, thank you very much.
Thanks, Martin.
Appreciate it. All right, let's see who we got here. 1-800-348-2551. That's a tease, because we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Support for WMC comes from the New York State Bar Association's Lawyer Referral and Information Services, offering assistance via a new website, findalawyerny.org. Wendy Hollow Veterinary Clinic, Montague, Massachusetts. Conventional and integrative veterinary medicine, including acupuncture, comprehensive pet care, and health services since 1998. WendyHollowVet.com. Noble Homes, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts, offering design-build services that feature passive solar and energy-efficient designs, supporting the local economy using local materials. Prefabricated house kits also available, noble-home.net. The Egremont Barn, comedy night on Friday, November 17th, with Bernadette Pauly and Jenny Rubin, and Saturday night, The Nice Ones, theegremontbarn.com for more information. And Ruby Star Healing Arts, Rhinebeck, offering spiritual consulting, energy healings, psychic readings, yoga, massage, beauty treatments, private hosted events, crystals, and more in a setting overlooking Rhinebeck. RubyStarHealingArts.com.
Thank you, Zachary. We're back. By email, good afternoon. We need a constitutional amendment to prevent gerrymandering. This practice is nothing less than legalized voter suppression. It takes the power of the vote away from the people. Politicians can artificially make states seem more red or more blue than they actually are. That is why Trump is in office. What can we do to get a constitutional amendment against this? Well, you can go around, you can collect signatures, you can get the members of Congress to propose such a constitutional amendment. But the one thing I wouldn't do in order to get that change is hold your breath.
That's right. And, you know, even with regard to this extreme partisan gerrymandering, as we see in Wisconsin, which is before the court in Gill v. Whitford, it's going to be a very, very, very close case. It's a very, very close case. And you know, you're not going to get the legislators who benefit from partisan gerrymandering. Yeah. You're not going to get them, I mean, to enact the law to limit their power and to put them at risk.
Mary had the same question. She said, what will it take to get rid of gerrymandering? Well, it's going to take an inflamed electorate. And I can tell you right now, based on the number of calls in this program, there aren't enough people who really are that all that concerned about it. Right, Vin?
I think that's because a lot of people don't understand the fact that so much of the dysfunction in our government, both in the federal government and in our state governments, is because of gerrymandering. Because the people just do not get what they want. And by and large, they're getting incumbents who win again and again and again because they're protected by all this carving up unfairly.
Okay, now, a lot of people are calling in, so we have to go fast now, Vin. They'll ask fast questions, and you'll give fast answers. Okay, here we go. Beth in Saranac Lake. Beth, you're on.
Hey there, guys. I'm loving listening to you. And first, I want to say, Vin, your vocal resonance is a lot like Howard Stern. I don't know if you
take that
as a compliment.
But not only that, you know who he looks like. He looks like Jamie Farr from The Mash.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's great. That's hilarious. So I have two questions for you. The first one is about, Vin said earlier, probably about 30 minutes ago, that the court shouldn't interfere in gerrymandering. And I really just don't know.
No.
No,
you're wrong, Beth. He was quoting others. Yeah.
Yeah. No, if I were to vote, I would throw out what Wisconsin has done. I think that's extreme partisan gerrymandering. I wouldn't allow it.
If Ben was the
Right. Well, I grew up in Mississippi, and everything is gerrymandered. Here's my second question. And you guys brought up oligarchy, and you were talking about how there's an oligarch in every legislature in the states. But I feel like McConnell is an oligarch, and he prevented us from having Merrick Garland. How? And I get emotional about this kind of stuff. Why aren't we suing somehow to make that unconstitutional, what he did? Because he just prevented the entire Senate from having a say. That means he prevented the entire country from having a say.
Well, because it's perfectly constitutional. We may not like it, but there's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits what he did.
Beth, thank you. Okay, now we're going to go to... Okay, now we'll go to Eli in Utica. Welcome back, Eli.
Thank you. You know, you just flipped my frame of mind when you said there's nothing in the Constitution that can prevent what he did. So are you saying that if that submission of Garland were done in Obama's first year, that they could just stall for 4 years?
The same thing.
Ad infinitum and never consider
the same thing.
The
Constitution simply says that the president nominates, and then the Senate gives its advice and consent. It does not require the Senate to have hearings or even to vote on confirmation.
Okay. Now, we're not going to duke it out, Eli.
The answer was yes, they can stall for 4 years. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
They can. That wouldn't be unconstitutional. Okay. Bad, but not unconstitutional.
We're not going to duke it out, Eli. Anything else?
Let me go on to what I called about.
Okay.
You kind of put Justice Kennedy and a place of honor above the other eight members of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
I kind of disagree. Liberal progressive like you, I like to think that my four Democrats voted because they appreciate a one man, one vote. So let's go on to another issue, which I think provides a similar comparison, and it's campaign finance reform, where we had the five Republicans vote against four Democrats. I believe the issue is the same. The Koch brothers famously spent $900 million in the last election.
Eli, we're having a discussion of gerrymandering today. We take your points.
Gerrymandering. Well, I just want to. Okay, the question is quick. If you want to just flip quickly, do you agree with the same that the 5-4 vote is just political party and not Democratic.
By and large, the record of this court for the last couple of decades has been very, very partisan. The Democrats, the liberals vote one way, the Republican conservatives vote the other way. Okay. That's the way it is.
Thank you, Eli. Okay, now we're going to, we're definitely going to Radu in Massachusetts. Okay, is it Radu? Is that how you pronounce your name?
Yes.
Okay, you're on. Go.
Hi. Just a quick question. Listening to all your details, since the voter has, the vote has no value, what is the difference between a totalitarian regime where the voter has no value and a democracy where the voter has no value?
Well, the vote has some value. It's just that it doesn't have anywhere near the value it ought to have if each vote had equal value.
Yeah, I think he makes a good point. You know, when you do something like this to a democracy, you...
Well, absolutely. You know. I mean, democracy is being targeted by this partisan gerrymandering, and it's undermining democracy. There's absolutely no question about that.
Thank you, Radu.
Thank you.
Okay, and now we'll go to Tony in Cooperstown. Tony in Cooperstown, you're on.
Hello.
Hey.
Hi. I wonder, this in New York right now, there's a sort of perverse value of the gerrymandering that's in place. I've been in not-for-profit housing for the past 35 years, and every year it's housing dollars get cut by the governor, they get ignored by the assembly, and then it's the state Republicans that bring the rural programs back in. Rural programs are just getting killed with the proliferation of state dollars that goes to large developers in downstate. So in that case, you know, there's some value going on, and it shouldn't be that way, but that's how it is.
Okay, but Tony, on the question of gerrymandering, what do you got? Bring it.
Well, that's it. I mean, if the upstate is gerrymandered for the Republicans, then it's doing us a good service, because without them, we would be more ignored than we are already.
Well, you know what? You know what? The reason I don't agree with you is that, remember, there's an assembly, too. And the assembly goes to the same kind of great computer and says, draw me districts upstate where we can't lose. And it does a pretty good job.
Yep.
But why do we still get shortchanged when it comes to, we don't get big assembly sticking up for rural areas when it comes to housing dollars, and that's from every year for the last 35 years.
Well, the power in the state's not balanced between the metropolitan areas and the rural areas. I don't think there's any question about that.
Okay.
Right. So that's all.
Thanks, Tony.
Okay. Now we have to decide where to go next, and we're going to, believe it or not, Heidi in Cooperstown. You're on, Heidi.
Hi. It's so disheartening what you guys are talking about, but I think we've come to a point in our country with everything that we should divide our country. I don't believe we have tried our democracy for 250 plus years, and we should now dissolve our government or our.
Where do you want to divide it? Where do you want to divide it?
Well.
Mississippi.
Personally, I'd like to send all of the right down to Alabama and they can have it. And the rest of us sane people can have the country. It would be hard to divide. I'm not saying.
Why not just everything west of the Hudson?
Or how about the South versus the North? We've heard of that one before.
I did, but maybe it'll work this time if we pretend to be grown-ups and do it properly.
Yeah, well, people are people. People are people, and most of us are not grown-ups.
Yeah.
There's the history of the species, Heidi.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Heidi. 1-800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. We got time for a few more of you. So there it goes. Let's go to Martha in Albany. Golly, gee whiz, Martha. I don't know what happened here. Martha, you there?
Yes.
Oh, great.
I know you didn't, you want to, I think that the campaign finance does have a very big influence on gerrymandering, because there's incentives for people who run for office to gain power which also ends up enriching themselves. They're beholden to their campaign donors,
right,
and turn around and do favors for them. I think that it people who go into it for the idea of being helping their constituents and doing things for their districts and for their country, those people are very hard to find because of the money in politics. So I think it makes a big difference. I think it
But wouldn't that be the same
the gerrymandering?
Wouldn't that be the same if there was not gerrymandering? Whoever won, whoever was the incumbent at that particular time, certainly would like some money for their next campaign. So, I mean, money in politics is always a problem with partisan gerrymandering, without partisan gerrymandering.
No, but I believe that if there weren't the money in politics the way it is, there would be more people who would be in it not for their own personal gain. And I think, you know, they may be less likely to term limits. I really think we ought to vote for, like, the best person in office. But, you know, this gerrymandering, I think, kind of gives a some impetus to the idea of term limits so that people can't
lots of people would agree with you.
I would. If by the way, Martha, if you had offered on the ballot, a constitutional question, a constitutional ballot, the question of whether or not we should have term limits on here, it would pass so
I think
so,
it would have won.
So
oh, yeah.
fast your
oh,
eyes
yeah.
would blink. Yeah. Martha, thank you. Okay, and now we're going to...
Interesting, Alan. You know, if we had term limits, you wouldn't have such a problem with partisan gerrymandering. Why bother with it? Why bother protecting incumbents?
Because while they're in office, it's helpful to have them there. So you gerrymander so that your party and your big shots.
But if you can't continue to be an incumbent because of term limits.
Now, Vin, you're a distinguished professor at the Albany Law School. But you're just wrong. And the reason
I'm wrong most of the time, Alan.
I'm just teasing you. The reason I don't think so is because let's assume you gerrymander and you get your people into office.
Yes.
Then you're going to – that seat is constitutionally safe.
You're right about that.
Okay, here we go. Let's go to Kevin in the car. Boy, I guess they're all in the same car. Kevin, you're on. Kevin,
you're in the car or in Cooperstown? Hi.
Good to talk to you. How you doing?
Good.
Hello. Yeah, listen, I think that is there a case that can be made such that this type of issue with gerrymandering is a form of a violation of contract between the administrators of government and the people who elect them?
Well, I think that would really be a stretch. I think what Justice Kennedy wants to do is turn it into a free speech issue, that it really diminishes your power to have somebody speaking politically on the issues that you choose. I think that's much more promising.
Okay.
Thank you,
Kevin. All right, let's go very quickly because we're running out of time here to Ed in Beacon. All right, Ed, you're on. Go.
Okay, very quickly. I heard the comment about the country being split.
Yep.
And I live in New York. The last time we voted for a governor, most of the counties voted for a Republican. And I thought it was funny that it was sort of, you know, proposed, I guess the talk was going around that we should split up New York and make a, you know, south of Westchester, I guess, their own Democratic way of thinking, and then most of the counties in New York, Republican.
Okay, that's
seems weird to me because New York is considered a blue state. So your thoughts?
Go, Vin.
Well, I mean, the counties, schmounties. I mean, in some of the counties, there's virtually nobody in there. And with regard to splitting the state, I hear that every once in a while from upstaters. I'm a proud upstater now. But, you know, New York City fuels the state. I mean, who are we kidding?
No question. Thanks, Ed. Okay, and very quickly, because we only got a second left, we'll go to Carl. Carl, your turn. Go ahead, Carl.
Yes, hi. Upstate New York, Oneonta area, Delaware County is where I live. Oneonta is where I work.
Okay, you got no time.
Gerrymandering for us is a matter of political survival for the few conservatives that we have. I know we're We're driven by New York City.
Okay, you got to stop there.
We would be swamped.
You got to stop there.
Very good.
Okay.
We need conservatives to balance us liberal Democrats out. You're absolutely right.
We are out of time. I want to thank everybody who called in. Apologize to those left on the line. I don't think there were any. I also want to thank Vincent Bonventri of Albany Law School for joining us today. Support for the Vox Pop comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine Exams Eye Care, Dry Eye Therapy, and now New American-Made Frames, where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. New England Hydroponics, the indoor gardening experts offering a full selection of hydroponic organic soils and indoor gardening equipment, Southampton and Framingham, Massachusetts, online at nehydro.com. And Hawkins House, Bennington, Vermont, a crafts market featuring Ed Levin and other handcrafted jewelry, pottery, blown glass, woodenware, clothing, handbags, accessories, Vermont products, and more. HawkinsHouse.net, interactive media consulting, a team of online strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the Capital Region and beyond since 1996. iMediaConsult.com. Thanks for joining us today, everybody on the Vox Pop. Our engineer has been Zach Malloy. Your calls were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Alan Shartok. Stay tuned now for a news update.